This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. And, you know, there's really no better way to say this, but I'm coming to you this week from my closet. We here at Only a Game have joined the work-from-home masses, and we're so glad that you've chosen us to help keep you company. So if you're still looking for your annual fix of brackets and alliteration, we've got just the thing for you.
Next up, we have Pygmy Hippo versus Star-Nosed Mole.
Our encounter begins with a star-nosed mole diving into the swamp next to the Pygmy Hippo.
That's actually two of my colleagues reading the Twitter play-by-play of March Mammal Madness.
Feeling a light brush on the side of its face, the Pygmy Hippo shakes its head and crushes the tiny star-nosed mole with a tusk. Pygmy Hippo defeats Star-Nosed Mole!
To explain, I'm joined, virtually of course, by Arizona State University Professor of Evolutionary Biology and Senior Sustainability Scientist, Katie Hind. Welcome, Professor Hind.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So I want to start back in 2013, otherwise known as the golden age of the BuzzFeed quiz. Please tell me what you were teaching back then and how BuzzFeed enters this story.
I was teaching a class on building babies because I study maternal and child health. And as a lab camaraderie building exercise, I had encountered on social media a BuzzFeed Animal March Madness. And I'd printed it out and I distributed it out to members of my lab and we started to fill it out. And the bracket was 16 animal species and it was based on which one was cutest. And I remember grabbing the brackets back from them and being like, this is no good. Because the NCAA March Madness experience is so exciting. It's 64 teams. And so I was really dissatisfied by this kind of shallow treatment of it. And I was like, we're going to do this differently. Give me an hour.
So what did you decide to do?
In the hour, I put together a 65 animal bracket. So I created a wild card to see who would get to, you know, get a bid into the show. Running away was a forfeit. It didn't have to be a bloody battle between these two animals. A lot of encounters among animals in the wild are very boring. And basically used what we know about these animals to talk about what would happen if they were to encounter each other. And I created certain rules.
Next up, the number 11 Bogue at the number 6 Common Cuttlefish.
Tonight's battle takes place in the temperate seas of the Eastern Atlantic.
While the cuttlefish technically has a home habitat advantage today,
whatever the better seeded species was, for the first three rounds, they got home habitat advantage. It was all based on what we know empirically. In these battles, I would take that science and turn it into a story.
A tentacle reaches out and wraps around the base of the Bogue's tail, known as a caudal peduncle.
They struggle, but Bogue succumbs to the inevitable end. Cuttlefish defeats Bogue!
Put it together and handed out to my lab, handed it out to some colleagues, and then I put it on my blog and talked about it on Twitter. I made jokes about there being a instead of an elite eight, it was an elite trait. Instead of a final four, it was a final roar.
And what was the reaction to all of this?
There was a lot of people that just were having a lot of fun with it. And part of it stretched across our spring break. And I was in South Africa in the Kalahari doing some pilot work on a potential research project. And so because of the time difference and how slow the internet was, I would wait until the middle of the night, put together these quick little battles, tweet them in the middle of the night, and then have to get up the next day and run around chasing meerkats. And it was pretty hilarious. The championship that year was between African elephant and warthog. So at the end, everybody's like, that was awesome. See you in 2014.
So this is now the eighth year of March Mammal Madness. 22,000 people now follow the tournament on Twitter, and that number seems to be growing by the day. Some of your followers have filled out brackets, just like you would for the NCAA basketball tournament. But instead of having, say, Michigan State going all the way, they might have Caspian seal. And there's an element of chance to this, just like there's an element of chance to March Madness, right?
we do insert an element of chance because those upsets are so incredible, right, in sport events. Yeah. And so what we do with this species, how the organizing team behind the scenes, we do a selection Sunday, and we have the species that we've selected for that year. It changes year to year as a chance to kind of showcase the breadth of the natural world. And we rank them a lot based on their weight, but with the expectation that predators tend to punch above their weight. Using what we know about their weaponry, their armor, their defense styles, their ambush or attack tactics, we do a kind of rough probability of what we expect the outcome to be. And then we use a random number generator to determine what the outcome actually is. And then what we do is when there's an unexpected outcome, we go into the literature, the academic scientific literature, and we find some kind of plausible explanation for this outcome.
So one thing people like to say during March Madness is this idea of survive and advance. And that sort of seems like a mantra for evolutionary biology, too.
So, you know, in evolutionary biology, it's really about, sorry, I'm going to just nerd out here for a second because it's about survival. I'm sorry. I have to.
nerd all you want.
Okay. So natural selection is acting on organisms relative to how many copies of their genes get into the next generation. So it's largely selection on reproductive outcome. But in order to reproduce, you generally have to survive. And so in that sense, we are highlighting key adaptations and traits in these animals that are something that are likely to be important for them to survive. Now, sometimes survival means being really good at attack. Sometimes it's really good about being able to defend. And sometimes he who runs away survives to reproduce a later day.
Well, so as you suggest, not every single one of these matchups is going to be a thriller. Could you tell me about, there's apparently a famous matchup from a couple of years ago, and you're going to have to help me with this, the Dahol and the Binturong?
Yeah, so that division was called the Who and the What Now, and it was a whole bunch of species that we figured most people wouldn't know about. So we had the Dole, which is a canid. It's a wolf-like species in Asia. And it had to fight a Binturong, which is a relative of the weasel that, fun fact, smells like Fritos or popcorn, depending on your exact sense of smell.
Dole versus Binturong.
Did someone make popcorn?
Nope. That's just the Binturong.
The Binturong eats a lot of fruit. They particularly like figs. And it was going up against a clear carnivore predator. So most people would have predicted that the Dole, the dog relative, would have won.
Yeah.
But at the time, because we craft these like stories, there can be things that happen in previous rounds that carry forward and have an impact on how a species performs in the tournament. And the day before,
Dole, a number one seed, gorged on Saiga to reach tonight's match.
We know how long it takes the Dole to digest from a really big meal.
Can't float like a butterfly or sting like a bee with a gut full of Saiga.
And so in this encounter, the Dole, being completely full, had very little motivation to want to fight a Binturong.
Binturong's claws slash across Dole's muzzle, confirming that his time is better spent quietly digesting yesterday's meal. Binturong pulls the upset over Dole.
So the Binturong ended up continuing to do its thing, and the Dole just went about its way, forfeiting the field of battle.
Well, this year's tournament is already underway. Has the random number generator already told you who's going to win? I mean, if I paid you a whole bunch of money, would you tell me who's going to come out on top?
Nobody has yet offered me the amount of chocolate it would take to reveal that.
So how has the canceling of the basketball tournaments affected your event, if at all? Have you suddenly gotten a lot more interest?
We have seen more activity on Twitter of bracket addicts. We're seeing a lot of parents whose kids are now not going into school because of the current pandemic crisis. And we're seeing a lot more discussion, everybody being dispersed, but showing up together in these online spaces to celebrate and cheer you know, the series of bouts, the play-by-plays, it's a couple hours of activity. And so it has that same kind of jumping up and down, screaming, fury, joy that you get from watching a really exciting sports event.
So if you were to have a message to basketball fans who are disappointed by the cancellation of March Madness, what would that be?
People that are sad to be missing out on their usual celebrations, I share those griefs. We're all experiencing it. And, you know, this is what it takes. But everybody is welcome to come to our virtual Coliseum for animal encounters. We welcome people to come and spend a few weeks celebrating science.
That's Arizona State University Professor Katie Hind. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's not too late to fill out your brackets for March Mammal Madness 2020. We'll have a link to all the action at onlyagame.org.